to you by everybody who made the Prime Omnibus possible, from the creative team working on it to the people agreeing to publish it to the fans that are making this a viable book to get published. I'm not going to sit here and tell you about how good it is right now, because that's what this whole episode is for. Just keep listening to the episode. It's good, I promise.
I'm David S. Dawson from The Intellectual Podcast, a show that spotlights creatives from all walks of life, part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other incredibly geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Welcome to Play Comics, where once again, I just don't care about video games. Please, nobody tell anybody that I said that, including yourself, because I am here to talk to Joe Glass about a wonderful book coming out from him either very soon or very recently, depending on when you're listening to this. The Pride Omnibus. Joe, how are you today?
Hi there. Thanks for having me. I'm great. We're a little bit of a head cold, so if I'm sounding a bit muzzy, it's because I am. But like I say, I'll try and power through this.
Well, we can hide all of that behind the fact that you have squarely put yourself into one of my favorite family of accents, which I'm sure is something that you did totally on purpose. And
absolutely.
I will not pay attention to the cold. I will just fawn over the accent.
People do seem to love the Welsh accent everywhere, which is baffling to me because I sound common as Mac to my ears, but there you go.
Well, it's that, and New Zealand is up there pretty well for me.
Mm.
But
that is a good one. That is a good
one. We could spend forever doing this. I don't want to do that. Maybe I'll make a bonus episode where I just talk about people and their accents. I don't know. But let's talk about some more important things.
Okay.
So, the Pride Omnibus is coming out, did come out June 2nd, assuming that the world doesn't explode into craziness.
Hopefully not. I really want my book to come out. So, yeah, June 2nd.
I really want your book to come out.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, June 2nd, just in time for Pride Month. So, you know, it's not a month which is obviously named after my book, as much as that would be awesome. Obviously, it is the month celebrating LGBTQ history, representation, inclusion, and just, you know, love and just wonderfulness. And yeah, to celebrate it literally within a day of being into the Pride Month, which is these days pretty internationally recognized, we will have the Pride Omnibus out, which collects something like 11 years worth of work from my self-published days right way through to our second season, which was a Comixology Originals title, so a digital first original title. And now Dark Horse Comics are putting together a gorgeous, fat, chunky boy of a book collecting the whole thing.
Well, the preview copy that I was sent over to make sure that I could actually see things, I mean, it's only like 450 pages, you know?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, but
it'll be totally a nice doable chunk.
Exactly. It's a nice... I've got a physical copy of it here. It is a nice thickness on it. It is just the kind of size you want on your bookshelves. It is absolutely beautiful. Dark Horse have done an astonishing job with it. And I really, really can't praise them enough. And yeah, it's going to be gorgeous and hopefully be on people's shelves and coffee tables soon.
Well, we'll come back to the Dark Horse thing because I definitely have some questions there. But... where did the Pride start for you?
So the Pride is initially self-published because basically it's my first comic. It's I started coming up with the ideas for it back when I was a teenager, like 15 years old, coming out of a closet myself at the time and coming to terms with my own sexual identity. And also being like a big comic book fan, but also feeling like I didn't see characters that were explicitly like me. They were like, I was a big X-Men fan in particular, and like there's loads of characters, and that whole mutant metaphor, which is obviously very much a metaphor for being queer, or can be analogous to it, but it was still, at the end of the day, it's a metaphor. And like, it for me, it just felt like I still couldn't really see anyone like me, and it was just another form of a closet. Like, it was a glass closet. Like, you know, these are characters who were technically, or there were a couple of characters who were technically queer, but they just never talked about it. Or, you know, there were characters who you could see as a metaphor for being queer. And it's just like, okay, that's great, but it's still not quite enough, because it winds up making you feel a little bit like, because no one's explicitly talking about it and being straight up about it, it starts to feel like there's something wrong with it, and that it's something you shouldn't talk about and that you shouldn't be proud of or share. And that for me was just like something I hated. I was just like, no, absolutely, we should have it be something which is celebrated in this medium, which I love just as much as anything else. And yeah, that's how I started coming up with this idea to do a superhero comic book, which is my favorite kind of genre, which was about explicitly and openly queer people, and also like of the spectrum of queerness, because one of the other issues which you always get sometimes in mainstream representation is it all kind of looks the same. Like, it's predominantly white. It's a lot of gay male and lesbian females, bisexual characters, if they exist, as villains and that kind of stuff. So I kind of wanted to sort of play with the stereotypes a little as well, but also then twist it and make it something which really truly represented the LGBTQ community a lot better. But yeah, I was noodling around with the idea, and a lot of the time I kind of felt like I was just doing it for myself, but like I really didn't think anyone else would be interested. And I was working with some friends on another comic book called Stiffs, which was a horror comedy set in South Wales Valleys, and they read some of my first scenes, which I've been writing like all through university for the Pride, and they pushed me to really make the Pride as well. So yeah, from there, the Pride started coming out around the same time as Stiffs, so about 11 years ago. And like I said, we self-published at first. It was very much a case of this little book from South Wales, which gradually spread out from the valleys as I started to do more and more Comic-Con shows here in the UK.
Well, first off, let me grow a few extra arms so you can have a few extra middle fingers for this is your first thing, because I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, for real, it's... I gotta say, like, thanks to everyone, because everyone's who's read it has been like really, really nice and kind, and like said how much they love the book, and it's kind of surprising, you know, in a way surprising, because like I say, it really was one of the first things I was writing, it's one of the first comic books I was putting out, and like very much the journey of making the series of, or at least the very first season of the Pride, was very much a learning curve. Like, I was very much learning new things about, you know, how to make comic books, and like what are the pitfalls and the barriers, and I fell down some of those pitfalls, and I've gone straight into some of those barriers. So you learn by stumbling and picking yourself up and carrying on, and the Pride was a book I did that with. So in that respect, Pride means a lot to me in that respect as well, because it's been there through my entire journey into the position I am in the industry today.
So did you get any kind of pushback or anything while you were making it? Because, wow, but I cannot think of a good way to say ask this.
It's okay.
It says what it is right on the cover. I mean, there's absolutely no question. So I can't imagine that you would get a lot of people looking at it and be like, oh, what? This is about the LGBTQ community?
You would be surprised. Like, anyone who's seen me do Comic-Cons, particularly in the UK, will know that on my table, to make it as... Because what I like to do is, as well as having the book, I like to advertise that, as far as I'm concerned, my table is a safe space for any LGBTQ fans out there. And like, the part of the way I do that is my table is covered in rainbows, like literally dripping. And I am usually covered in glitter or sequins or something fabulous. So like, it's pretty obviously a little bit of a gay haven and a sort of desert of fabulousness, oasis of fabulousness, a desert of the mundane. And yeah, for some reason, sometimes I will occasionally get someone come by the table and I will bring up the, yeah, it's actually all about LGBTQ superheroes. And they'll be like, really? I'm like, yeah, I guess the rainbows weren't enough of a giveaway. But yeah, generally speaking, it's pretty obvious. It's very much a big part of what I was saying about the representation, the visibility, is wanting to be explicitly and obviously about being queer and about queer people. But yeah, in terms of pushback, yeah, there was some. Literally the very first comic book convention I did, there was a guy who, we did a little flip book, which was like Stiffs and Pride on the other side, and it was just like a little short self-contained story of the Pride. And the dude who read it just sort of says like, oh, you should really maybe not make it about being about gay superheroes, because like, it reads like it's being on a soapbox. People don't like that. No one's gonna wanna read this. And like, even that comment on that very first comic convention wasn't enough to put me off, because at that same comic convention I had seen a dozen or more people who, as soon as I said, oh yeah, it's about queer superheroes, faces lit up. So, I like that. It has ever since, and evident, and you know, proof's in the pudding now. The Pride continued to the point that yeah, it actually outlasted Stiffs, and it's been the book which everyone wanted to sort of read and sort of pick up. So, yeah, it's evidently that dude was wrong. And now the only sort of remaining pushback I get is like from the usual anti-diversity crowd and Comicsgate and things like that. And frankly, I don't care what they think.
I mean, I like to know what they think just because I like to accurately make fun of them, but that's about it.
I mean, yeah, that's about all knowing what that they think is good for, or seeing anything they make. But yeah, generally...
And then you can specifically make something that'll push their buttons even more.
Oh, yeah. I mean, ever since, like... it started clearly upsetting them that there was a book out there about very queer things. I mean, like, I'd already, to be fair, I was about to say something, I'm just like, that's not technically true. Technically, I had always decided that any kind of comic book I make or any kind of project I do was going to include LGBTQ people. Because, you know, the amount of representation we have in all media is not great. Like, there is so much for straight people, but there's very little for queer people, and particularly other aspects of the queer community outside of the gay, lesbian, and bi aspects of it. So I wanted to include a lot more. So I always knew I would do it with everything I do, but when I saw them coming for the Pride and the kind of comments they throw at it, or their little sort of hateful reviews where they like affect gay lisps and do like really dated homophobic actions, it just got to a point where I was just like, yeah, I'm gonna make really super queer books. So like, after that, I've done Glitter Vipers, which is even more loudly queer than the Pride is, which, you know, having looked at the Pride, is saying something.
Oh, definitely. I don't know how you would turn this up, but I guess you did.
Oh, I find ways.
What got Dark Horse involved in putting this collection together?
So when, after we did a Kickstarter for our own self-published collection of the Pride, which was the Pride Season 1 and the first few issues of Pride Adventures at the time. And I had that sort of going on my desk for years, and then Comixology turned around and they started doing their Originals line. And in that time, the book was on Comixology Submit, and like, I was very friendly with the Comixology guys. They were really supportive of the Pride, even as an independent self-published title. And they sort of, you know, helped me out a lot and helped get the books into more hands. So I went and spoke to them about possibly continuing the series, and that got picked up. That became Pride Season 2, which was a Comixology Originals, title when they started doing their originals line. And from there, Dark Horse are picking up the Comixology originals titles to do print editions. And yeah, Dark Horse then turned around, came to doing the first few print editions, and they wanted to do For Pride as one of the first few to launch For Pride Month, and make a big whole deal of it and do a real big omnibus edition, which would just collect everything. So it wouldn't just be the Comixology original season, it would be all of the Pride, which I've ever made to date in one big book, and just making it as beautiful as possible. And when I heard that from my people at Comixology that Dark Horse wanted to do that, I was immediately just like, yes, 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 we should do this. This sounds absolutely amazing, and I am 100% on board.
Now, is this like in the movies where you're all nice and super calm and yes, and then you hang up the phone and go screaming around the house?
Oh yeah, that was fully it. Like, I was literally, as at the time of this recording, I've been living at home. So I live at home with my parents, but finally moving out next week. And I think I got off a call and came racing downstairs and was just like, oh my god, my book's being published by Dark Horse Comics, it's so awesome. And I think my mother's reaction was probably just like, okay, what's that? I had to fully explain how much of a big deal it was, but once they understood, they were very supportive, and yeah, it was very much happy times.
So I found here in talking to a lot of people that when you get this creator-owned stuff, especially, because it's kind of hard to pull this off when you're jumping into a long-running series, that at least one character is definitely kind of the semi-autobiographical character stand-in. So which one is that for you?
It's probably Fab Man, which is so odd. I think when I first started making the book and started making the characters, I didn't think of Fab Man like that. I thought Fab Man was representative of friends of mine. Like, you're the very camp, very flamboyant, very stereotypical gay guys. Because, you know, camp, flamboyant, and loud gay people are a big part of how we got the rights and pleasures that we have now in society. Like I said, those things were also obviously achieved by people of color and trans individuals in particular. But like I say, the out of the gay guys who have been big movement makers for gay rights, they tend to be these really camp flamboyant people. So I always felt like, okay, we've got to stop having the only gay representation being, as much as I am loath to use the term, straight acting or straight passing gay guys, because like that's not helpful to anyone necessarily in comics, because unless they, those kinds of characters have to explicitly say on panel that I'm gay, otherwise you wouldn't know. So I wanted to have a character who was representative of my friends who like that and be fully flamboyant and out. And as I progressed writing him, I became more comfortable in the fact that I'm one of those guys, really. And that I can be super flamboyant in camp, and that I love to wear super loud, colourful outfits, and I love wearing glitter and makeup and just generally being fabulous. So over time, I've come to realise that Fab Man is actually me, a little bit on the page, except a lot buffer, and he looks better in hot pants.
Well, that's a nice little twist, though, to where the character is your origin instead of the character's origin being from you.
Yeah. I mean, making the book, I've had a lot of wonderful experiences with people at Comic Cons who have told me that reading the book has been so helpful to them, or has given them a safe space or safe haven, or to feel like they were really seen. And likewise, I've had even people come up to me and say that they read the book and had considered things from a different point of view, and even a couple who said that it actually made them realize that they were themselves queer. But ultimately, making the book taught me a lot about myself as well, and about sort of like what I wanted out of life and out of representation and out of inclusion, and what I wanted to see of myself in not just the medium but also in the industry. So yeah, it's very interesting how the book's been kind of taught me things as well as putting things out there for other people, I guess.
So the other characters on the team, were you basing them on specific people, or were they more of like plays off of existing characters?
Combination of both. A lot of their personalities aren't necessarily a specific singular person, but definitely amalgamations of people I knew, or people I grew up with, or even celebrities, just sort of picked and sort of put together to create this personality. But then a lot of the visual styling and the power sets and things like that of the characters was based on superhero archetypes. So as much as I was also playing with the idea of stereotypes and how stereotypes aren't inherently harmful and aren't inherently negative, it's how they're used. I also want to play with archetypes in that, you know, you have a Superman-esque character, you have a slightly Batman-y character. And that sort of comes from a bit of a two-way sort of a two-pronged, sorry, sort of avenue there, in that for one thing it means that you can kind of go in there and kind of feel like you know these characters already, because you kind of know characters that they're like and that they're based on or have similar powers, and you know, you feel like you kind of know them a little bit, which, you know, particularly with a superhero book and a new independent, as it started, release, is very handy. Particularly if you're doing an ongoing story as opposed to like self-contained stories. And the other reason for it was I wanted to sort of play with those archetypes a little bit and just sort of show that, you know, you can have a flamboyantly gay Superman type who is just as much of a tough hero as, you know, the Big Blue Boy Scout. So it was kind of a way to sort of get to play with both, but also make it as accessible as possible to as many people as possible.
Besides Fab Man, who has come to be your favorite character?
Besides Fab Man, it's probably a toss-up between Angel, our superhero drag queen, and Frost, our trans superhero, because for quite different reasons. Because Angel is the one who pushes back to Fab Man and to a lesser extent Wolf quite a lot in the series, and not pushes back in a way to stop them, but essentially to push them to think and try harder when dealing with aspects of the community in particular. And in a way it meant that if Fab Man was sort of this voice of me in the book, or a character that was not just a little bit of me in the character, but also like the character was feeding back into me, Angel was kind of the voice in my head which was pushing me to try and do better and to think about things and consider things from all angles a bit more. So because, you know, everyone likes to think like, you know, they're progressive and that they know all the answers and that, you know, they're a good person because, you know, I wouldn't do this, but like, everyone's still got things to learn. Like, even, you know, the oldest, most hard fighting activist amongst us still has things to learn, like, because we've all benefited from various structures and institutional problems in our society. At the end of the day, I am a white cisgender guy, so aside from the being gay thing, like, I've had it fairly easy in that respect. I think being gay thing and being working class thing, but like other than that, I've had it fairly easy. So Angel got to be that voice which pushed me to think about other things and pushed me to do better. Frost became a favorite just because her story just became so powerful, and like season two, in particular the latter half of season two, delved into her story in particular quite a way, and it changed and evolved so much before it came out to the final package, and I hope that it speaks to the trans community well and is representative of them. I've had some very nice feedback from it recently, so hopefully like there's others who feel the same. And she just became a very powerful and emotional character for me, and as such, it was always a joy to write her, because there's a lot that I could see and relate to in her and her struggle. And for me, that's always been a part of what the Pride was pushing people who don't necessarily identify with a particular identity or even as queer at all, but to see those stories and see those characters and then consider a different point of view and realize that, oh, what, something which a person might have put off as like, oh, that's a gay issue, it doesn't concern me, or a trans issue, it doesn't just concern me, is a human rights issue, and it's a human issue that really concerns everyone. So she kind of slightly became the embodiment of that, I guess, towards the end of the season. So yeah, but they've kind of become my favorite ones to write.
Well, I mean, I can definitely tell you that the people that I told that we were going to be doing this was Twitter, where I have, I think, firmly kind of, as firmly as I can, being in the straight cis white guy that I am, kind of gotten to be at least Twitter fellow followers, mutuals, that's the word I wanted, at least Twitter mutuals with a bunch of the queer comic community. They all seemed very excited that we were going to be doing this.
Oh, cool,
and
awesome.
I'm telling the Jay and Miles Explain the X-Men Discord that we're doing this. They're all very excited about it. So,
oh, awesome.
I mean, it's kind of a pre-primed good response there, but it was still a really good response.
Yeah, and that's what I love. Like, the community's been absolutely fantastic with Pride, and with me. Like, they've been super welcoming. I mean, I don't know if there's an element of, like, also kind of a case of seeing myself as one of them, in that, you know, I've also spent some time being a comics critic, and working with, you know, a certain comics website, and you know, I've been in the trenches against a lot of the more toxic elements of fandom again as well. So it's kind of that element. But yeah, generally people have responded to the Pride really well as well, and it's been really really heartwarming for me, because, like I say, that book is very much my baby. I love it a lot. It helps me through a lot. So yeah, to know that other people get something out of it really does mean a lot to me.
And like I was telling you before we started recording, I got through like the first 150 issues of this. Or wow, let's try that again. I got through like the first 150 pages of this because I like to read these things super last minute when I'm talking to people so that my initial reactions can be pretty fresh. And I think more so than anything in a long time, this is one where I definitely want to go back and read the whole thing for more context, read the whole thing for just like not just trying to get through it quickly so I can see as much as possible. I want to see the little details of things and really go back and finish this. And I'm going to be really happy when I can get this one on the shelf in my house.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much. Like, yeah, I hope people do multiple read-throughs, because I filled the book with Easter eggs in a sense. Like, a lot of it is queer community Easter eggs or queer pop culture Easter eggs. But it's just, I'm hoping more people give it multiple readings and so start picking up on some of the sort of elements of what I threw together. I mean, like, just to give people like a bit of a clue of like the kind of thing I'm talking about. For like all the real names of the superhero characters in the Pride are actually, well, actually I say all, I think most, I think there's maybe one or two characters where I couldn't quite manage it, so I had to just come up with something entirely fresh. But most of the characters' real names are actually an amalgamation of two or more famous LGBTQ icons' names thrown together to create a new character name. To take like a really obvious one, I've got Owen Mercury, who's I think we only took his surname, which obviously is Freddie Mercury, to get the surname for him. And it also then helped that Owen Mercury is Twink, who is our metal skinned superhero, so having his real name be Mercury kind of worked in that respect as well. So yeah, there's a bunch of little sort of things like that all through the series, which was just me having a little bit of fun. I mean, like, that's why the superhero code names are what they are as well. Like, so many of them are gay subculture terms, like Twink and Bear and Wolf and Muscle Mary. And I just kind of, that just came from, I love that part of gay culture. And I just thought they sound like superhero code names anyway. So that's kind of where that came from.
I mean, if it's sitting right there, you might as well lean into it, right?
Exactly, exactly.
And then what advice do you have for somebody looking to get into making comics?
I mean, like, the main thing is just, it's really hard to say, because it sounds like such a like washing my hands of the question almost, is make comics. And that's like, it's whenever someone says like, oh, how do you make comics though? You'd be like, well, you know, do you want to write or do you want to draw? And then like, if it's draw, then you draw. And if it's write, then you write. It really is as simple as that. And then obviously, if you're not writing and drawing, and you are just doing the one role, like obviously in my case, just a writer, you just sort of got to find your people. So to do that, you go to Comic Cons, you check out the forums and the message boards and Twitter, and find the artists you like and the people who might be interested in the same things as you, and talk to them and see if they might want to collab and see if they want to make a book with you. There's a lot of things, like I say, you will, no matter how many times you read like how someone's path into making comics was, or the kind of things you should do and the kind of things you shouldn't do, you will still make those pitfalls. Because like me and my friends, like we read all those things, we heard all the advice, and we still walked into what, looking back, are pretty obvious pitfalls and mistakes, some of which almost, you know, stopped the Pride dead in its tracks. And it's just something which is going to come up, and you only learn by failing and by stumbling. So the main thing to do to get there and to be doing that is to just start making them. And don't let the voice in your head, like I did for so many years, tell you that no one's going to want it, no one's going to be interested, that, you know, if you are writing it, you're just writing it for you, because no one's going to want to receive that comic book. Because I can guarantee you, no matter what that comic book is about, there is going to be someone out there who wants to read it. I mean, we live in a world which is what, like 7 billion plus people now. Like, do you honestly think that the thing that you like and that is in your head constantly, it's only you thinking about it? It's really a case of just don't let it hold you back. Don't let that voice stop you. Just go ahead and do it.
And how did you find your people to work on this? I mean, one of the things that I found really interesting here was you've got the little different art styles thrown in, at least in the part that I was able to get through, but it works so well, even though that art style is so different.
Yeah. I mean, it was a long story of how we kind of got there. Initially, we had Gavin Mitchell drawing the series. So he did the first two issues of the Pride that there ever were. And he was actually working on that other comic with me and my friends called Stiffs. Because this was one of those pitfalls we fell into. We were complete idiots and we're like, yeah, we can make two monthly comics with one artist and get them out on a regular time. So it got to that point, like after that second issue, where Gavin and us realized that, you know, we can't keep going this way because nothing's getting done. So Gavin stuck with Stiffs, and I then started looking and working with other artists. And it worked really well for that first season of The Pride, particularly because it was very much a community of people coming together to make this book, which was about a community. So it worked really well. And it meant that you had all these different voices and these people with different backgrounds and coming from different locations being part of the book. As for like how I found many of them, like some of them, by the time we were like two issues in, like we'd been exhibiting Comic-Con, so like some I just met at shows, and they were artists whose work I liked and that I really wanted to do some work with. So I talked to them and just be like, hey, do you have maybe some time coming up? Do you want to work on the Pride for a little bit? And sometimes it was really just as simple as I'd see an artist whose work popped up on my Tumblr feed and I really liked it, and I would just message them and just be like, hey, so I do this book about LGBTQ superheroes, would you like to maybe draw a story? And it just sort of goes from there. At the end of the day, that's the other thing you can't hold yourself back with. Like, the worst that an artist can say is no. And like, the other thing to bear in mind, particularly if you're a new creator, just starting out, is, you know, you can love like the work of like a big Cliff Chang kind of creator or something like that for ages, but they're not necessarily going to want to draw your book, no matter how good it is. Like, you should focus on like working with the people who are coming up the same as you, you know. So like, look at those forums, look at those message boards, look at Tumblr, look at Twitter, look at social media. You will find other people who really, really want to make comic books and are in the same sort of rung on the ladder that you are, and you can help each other up by working together. So yeah, you just message people, you just start putting it out there, and yeah, people will want to work with you. You just kind of have to be respectful, be kind, be empathetic, of, you know, not everyone's going to necessarily love your idea as much as you do. And yeah, you just wind up sort of finding the people who do want to sort of take part and go from there.
And I can't believe I forgot to ask about this earlier, but of course the main villain in this first season is a kind of religious-y guy.
Yeah, it was a dual sort of thing for me, because I think the inspiration really came for the character of the Reverend was back. I studied in America, in America for a little while, in a place called Utica, and I went on this group trip one day, and we were at a talk or a lecture, I guess, from the mother of Matthew Shepard. And if you don't know, Matthew Shepard was a young man who was beaten up and brutalized in a horrific homophobic attack in, I want to say, the late 90s. And he was left for dead, and he died shortly after succumbing to his injuries. And that lecture from his mother was one of the most powerful things which I ever saw, and it sort of struck me and hit me in deep within me. But like, one of the things which also hit was the funeral for Matthew Shepard was picketed by the Westboro Baptist Church, and at that time we were also just a few years out after 9/11 had happened. And the Westboro Baptist Church was also picketing soldiers returning from Iraq funerals and things like that, because they wanted to push their agenda of hatred and bigotry that they tried to mask with religion, and saying that it was about being faithful and that it was about believing in the Bible and God and Christianity. And all of that's not true. All of that was just a way for them to make an excuse for being as vile and hateful examples of human beings as they could, led by, obviously, Reverend Fred Phelps, who, you know, now thankfully is gone. And yeah, it meant that was immediately where I wanted to go with the character, with the first villain for the Pride, because it wasn't about religion. It wasn't me trying to say like religion is evil, religion is bad, or religion is all anti-gay or anything like that. It was about saying that there are people who will use religion to, as an excuse to do these things, to be that evil and hateful to their fellow human being. And it's the use of religion that I find appalling. So that was the true villain, and why I felt needed to be that first villain of the Pride, was someone who just wanted to revel in being as awful as they could be, but use something which could be used for good things to do those awful things, and but it was never really about religion.
I think you pulled that one off really well too.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I hope so. It was always like one of my concerns, like, because obviously he calls himself a reverend. He's very much wearing the dog collar, the priest collar and everything. So it was always my worry that that people might think that was what I was saying was like, that religion was bad or Christianity was bad. You know, I'm not myself a Christian. I am very much... not an atheist, but I'm a very spiritual person, but I would say I'm agnostic as far as God's wise goes. But I do not believe in villainizing any kind of faith or religion. I can see the benefits of anyone's faith, but there are people who have used it for horrible means. And that is what I disapprove of, and that's what I don't like, and that's what I wanted to be the bad guy. Granted, you know, is in a character who's wrapped up in all the trappings, but he's wrapped up in those trappings because he's trying to convince people that he's in the right, which he isn't.
I grew up Catholic, and mostly in the American South, which had, for me, meant a lot of Baptist people, which different from the Westboro Baptist Church, but still a lot of anti everything you can possibly think of. And I definitely didn't read this as all religion is super bad.
Yeah, exactly. I think most people got that. Like, I think I've had one or two people, you know, question about the use of it, but very much that was at the time the comics were individually coming out. So like when we'd have long gaps between issue 3 or 4 or something. Like, I think anyone who's come at it and has been able to read like the entirety of season 1 in one go has never got that. They've always got that, yeah, no, this isn't an anti-religion thing. It's an anti-people who misuse religion thing. And generally, beyond that, just an anti-hate and bigotry bill. Comic. I'm not making laws here, people. I don't know why I said that.
Are you sure you're not just looking into the future? Because honestly, now that you say that, this is something where I can see somebody picking up film or TV rights.
I mean, I would love it. I would certainly be very interested in seeing it translated into film or TV, because both those mediums still also have their own problems with LGBTQ representation. I'm open to it. I will very much only want an executive producer credit, and I would love a hand in the casting. But aside from that, it's all yours to take away and adapt to your heart's content. It would still have to be hella gay when they do it.
Well, yeah, I just figured that part was a given.
you can't take that. They're given these days. Like, they made The Imitation Game and barely played about the fact that Alan Turing was a homosexual in that film at all. That's an actual real person.
I never actually saw that one, so...
I can't say that I've seen it all the way through myself. It's not a great film by any stretch of the imagination.
That's what I heard from everybody, so that's pretty much why I didn't bother. See, I'm going to have you thinking about casting choices now. You're going to go make this happen.
I've been there for years. Like, I'm already sort of down there. Like, and the things I would love to do, like we were talking earlier about, like, you know, how, you know, this is my first book, and like, you know, people will always be very nice about it, but like, there are still things I would change. If I was doing the Pride again from the start, there are things I would change. And like, the way I see it now is like, all right, if we were to adapt the Pride, there's things I'd change, and some of that could easily be done in the casting. And one of the things I would love to do is make the team a little bit less white and a little bit more diverse, because in the first season they were diverse, certainly in LGBTQ identity, but maybe less in other intersectional identities, and that's something which season 2 addressed. But like, certainly if we were to adapt it, like, I know that one of the people I would love to get for maybe Twink, so I would love to get him to read the role of Twink, would be Keenan Lonsdale. I think he'd be brilliant in the role, and it would just be a bit different. Like, he's been runners and speedsters, so like, why not be the big tough metal guy this time? So yeah, that would be pretty cool.
And what are your plans for the Pride moving forward?
So I've got loads more ideas for stories, and loads more ideas for seasons of the Pride. So hopefully I can make the Pride season 3. I've certainly got ideas for what would be the Pride season 3 and the Pride season 4 already prepped and ready to go. And it just sort of all comes down to if people show that they really want to see more. So yeah, people really need to sort of buy the Pride Omnibus and tell their friends to buy the Pride Omnibus, and like hopefully we do really well, then yeah, we can make the Pride season 3, 4, maybe even 5 and 6 a reality, and just keep going, because I've got plenty more stories I want to tell with these characters and in this world. So yeah, hopefully we can just keep it going. I know one of the things, actually one thing which I would want to mention, like one of the ideas I would love to do for a third season for Pride, and maybe a fourth as well, is to continue the Pride Adventures short self-contained stories a little bit by having them maybe be backups into the main series' individual issues, and to use that platform to highlight new creators. And particularly LGBTQ creators, and particularly new LGBTQ creators, to use that platform which I have now to help bring people up, because like I think that's something that all creators, and particularly new creators, should be doing, is just trying to help everyone up, because this industry can be very hard, and having struggled 11 hard years to get to where we are now, like I would very much love to give that helping hand to more people. So like if I could do a few extra shorts to just sort of give people a chance to benefit from that platform I have, then yeah, hopefully I'll get to do that in Pride season 3.
Well, if that's not a reason to make it happen right there, I don't know what is.
Yeah, so just tell all your friends, everyone's got to buy the Pride Omnibus, because that's how we're going to get new story deals for people.
I mean, I will definitely buy it. I am thinking of, I'm going to say at least 4 people I know who should definitely buy it.
Awesome, thank you so much.
And that's only because I'm not even trying to think of anybody.
Like it's coming out in June. It's a perfect Pride Month gift for the LGBTQ person in your life. But it is also the perfect Christmas gift, the perfect Kwanzaa gift, the perfect Hanukkah gift. Like literally every gift this year, you should be getting someone the Pride Omnibus. So yeah, everyone out there, if you like bright, positive superhero stories which are colorful and fun, but also have a strong vein of LGBTQ representation and inclusion through them, the Pride Omnibus has got it all for you, honey. It's like nearly 500 pages long, and you could have got all the action you need.
And let's mention this too, I looked on Amazon, say what you will, they have prices, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Political things aside, their social issues aside, they have prices. We've been saying Omnibus this whole time, which makes me think, okay, you know, like $60, $75 book, American. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the exchange rate is right now. Amazon has it for like $30, but it's also on sale.
And it's like literally a fantastic price. And like, that is such a great introductory price for what is the whole series to date. So like this is the thing I've been saying to people, is like not only is it like everything you need of the Pride, like it's literally all of the Pride that there is to date, but it's also dirt cheap really for what you're getting, for all of the comic that you're getting there. I mean, that is like 17 issues in one book basically. And it's I think in the UK here it's selling for about £25, so it's just like, that's wild to me. You would not get a Marvel or DC book with 17 issues in selling for £25.
No, not at all.
Easily, they would easily be like closing in on $100 books, those would. So yeah, guess what, if you want a great big chunk of comic which is good value for your buck as well, then yeah, again, Pride Omnibus is the book.
Buy it for yourself. Buy it for your friends. Buy it for your enemies, because you know it'll piss them off. But it was still a sale, so it counts just as much.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, Joe, it has been wonderful talking to you about all of this. If people want to hear more... I know. I forgot something.
Oh, no.
I did. I did, and I might even leave that in because this is how much I want to know.
Okay.
Who is your favorite Muppet?
My favorite Muppet? Okay.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Oh, this is so hard because there's so many I love. I think everyone is expecting me to say Miss Piggy because, you know, icon. But I would actually say that my personal favorite Muppet is probably, oh God, there's so many. You know what, Animal. I'm just gonna go out and say it. I just love the Animal. Growing up, like the red, fuzzy, going completely nuts. The fact that he's one of the only Muppets who really just says, I don't know. And you know what? I just love drummers. So drummers were always my bag growing up as a teenager. So yeah, of course I love the Animal.
Animal's so good.
I
can't wait till we get to the Buddy Rich episode of The Muppet Show.
But like, I love all of the Muppets. Like, Kermit's a favorite of mine as well, just because, you know, he's just so brilliant. The voice is so brilliant for Kermit. And of course, Miss Piggy, because Diva. But yeah, definitely. Like, the Muppets have, I don't think there's really a bad character in the Muppets. They're all fantastic.
So you got me trying to think of who would be the worst Muppet now, and I can't think of anybody.
Like, Sammy the Eagle, and he's like the driest character.
I love him.
Exactly.
Because he's like that.
It's his whole like stuffed shirt demeanor, and just like that just makes him adorable. He's perfect. He's lovely. So yeah, just absolutely love him.
Well, on that note, it has now been even more wonderful talking to you about this. If people want to hear more from you, where else can they find you around the internet?
So the big place is Twitter, where I don't shut up. There I am at Joseph Glass. I'm on Instagram a lot as well as at Joe Glass. All one word. Do not do an underscore after it. That is a very different Joe Glass. But yeah, on Instagram you find me as at Joe Glass, and on YouTube you can find Joe Glass Comics, which I haven't updated in a little while, but like I say, I'm moving soon. I'm gonna have a lot more time and a lot more space to record videos, so I'm hoping to get back on that particular horse as well. So yeah, those would be the big places.
And besides the Pride, if people wanted to check out your work, what would you recommend to them?
I would recommend Glitter Vipers, which is the one which is out at the moment, which is again super queer and all about a drag queen in Manchester, UK named Bi Felicia, who starts a street gang with her friends to fight back against homophobic crime, which is on the rise in Manchester, and kick ass and just be fabulous while doing it, which is available from my store at joeglasscomics.co.uk. And if you go to the store, you will find all of my books, pretty much, plus gorgeous pins as well. So yeah, if you follow my website, you can see all of my wonderful works.
And as always, we'll have links to all that stuff down in the show notes. Normally I would say it's because clicking links is easier than spelling, but also just to make sure you're going to the right one, because I'm a little bit scared to find out what that wrong Joe Glass is.
Oh God, yeah, right?
Don't go there, just click the link.
I'm going to leave it vague so people can be surprised. I was like, normally I tell people, but I'm just like, no, I'm not going to tell you. It'd be a surprise if the curiosity gets a better of you. I wouldn't recommend it, but...
As always, too, if you want to find me, you can head on over to Twitter at PlayComicsCast, where most of the time I'm interacting with other people about comic stuff because they're fun. But you can also head on over to PlayComics.com, where there's links to all the social media stuff. You can find links to all the other episodes, every creator that I've ever talked to ever in the entire world, because that's the reason why I got to talk to them. And if you want to hear these episodes early, you know, you can support me on Patreon for $1 a month. That's all it takes. I mean, you can obviously do more, and doing more makes it more possible for me to buy stuff from the wonderful people like Joe who are making good stuff. I don't know. I'm trying to find a way to be a little more supportive of other people with all that money. If you want to hear some other wonderfully geeky shows, you can head on over to GunnaGeek.com to check out all the other shows in the Gunna Geek Network. And if you like the music that we're rudely talking on top of right now, head on over to soundcloud.com/bestday to check out Best Day's music. But most of all, just grab a game, grab a stack of comics, preferably something that's a little more inclusive than what usually comes out, and go find yourself a new favorite character.
Any pushback I get is like from the usual anti-diversity crowd in Comicsgate and things like that, and frankly, I don't care what they think.